Wake up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good morning to you on SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. You know what? We've gotten a time in the last week and a half or so where we've kind of the reality of where we're at right now hits us, and it can be kind of depressing, and it kind of can get you kind of anxious, and I completely understand all that. But every now and then, just get a little bit of humor in the sports world. So yesterday, the IOC announced officially that the Olympics were going to be postponed, moved to 2021. Now, if you follow the timeline of this story, on Sunday, they announced that they would be looking into postponing the games, and they would be talking to a whole bunch of different entities, you know, just making sure that everybody was on the same page, what did they feel, all of those things, and then they would collectively come together and make a decision. But then Dick Pound of the IOC just came to the USA Today on Monday and said, yeah, by the way, we're closing this thing down until next year, and USA ran with that story. And then Tuesday, no surprise, the IOC came out and said, yeah, there'll be no Olympics in 2020. Well, all right, so humor me here a little bit, because I'm looking for anything that'll make me smile. Why in the world did they think it was going to take 4 weeks to determine whether or not they were going to be able to postpone the Olympics due to coronavirus? Like, seriously, how long do you think these conversations were that they had to have with Japanese business officials, the game, you know, the Olympic committees for all the countries, all the broadcasters, the sponsors, everybody that was involved in whatever decision-making process the IOC was going through? Did they need really 4 weeks, a month to determine whether or not the Summer Games needed to be postponed due to coronavirus? I think they made phone calls and went, yes, we're actually having a conference call for 1 o'clock today. If you'd like to join in, we're going to be discussing some of the pros and cons and the ramifications of shutting down the games. Shut it down. We're good. Okay. That's a vote for yes. And they just kept going through the phone lines until everybody went, wow, that was quick. Now we're over by lunch. Wow. We didn't even have to have the meeting. I mean, in all seriousness, 4 weeks was a really, think about where we were 4 weeks ago. Nobody even thought we'd be here doing any of this. We thought we'd be running through March Madness, getting ready for the Masters, all of that. 4 weeks ago, we were kind of didn't contemplate the idea of shutting down sports. And they thought they would take 4 weeks to determine whether or not this worldwide virus would postpone the Olympics?
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And you can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Love to get your thoughts this morning as we roll along here on a Wednesday. I'm feeling pretty good today. I haven't gotten all disheveled yet by my quarantine, I haven't gone completely mad. You might start noticing that, though, in the next month? You start noticing, like, I'm gone a little stir-crazy
with the quarantine. That's going to happen.
Keep a mark on, you know, like a mark out for weird moments in the show. Like, if I do a whole segment on making the perfect peanut butter and jelly sandwich, you're going to be like, somebody get him out of the house.
Funny you should mention that. Because I can relate. If you do go to peanut butter jelly sandwich mode, I can relate that back to sports.
You can? All right. Very good.
I have an excellent clip of a certain coach known not to say many words describing how to make the perfect peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I think I've heard that story before. Yeah. So, yeah, well,
He was personable.
Back when he was personable. Exactly. Exactly.
And not on to Cincinnati.
So the Cam Newton era in Carolina is now officially done. That was not a surprise, but you know what? When it happens, you kind of go, wow, all right. You know, it's like one of those moments where you go, yeah, they're going to release him. And it's more businesslike. And then when it does happen, you get a little bit like, all right, it's over. He is done in Carolina. He is going to be on to a new team.
The only thing that's really, really surprising about that is that it's only a $2 million cap hit.
I know. Like, $2 million in dead money. It saves them $19 million, and they ran out and finished up that deal with Teddy Bridgewater for $63 in 3 years. So the Ringer has a great timeline of how the Cam Newton era came to an end. Listen. I'm just going to lay it out the way they lay it out, because it's if you want to find out how you can go from an MVP Super Bowl appearance to getting released by your team in a pretty short amount of time, this is pretty much how it would go. So here's how the Ringer laid it out, the Cam Newton saga. Last year in training camp, Newton's bum shoulder was under a spotlight as he recovered from a 2018 injury. Once the season began, it was clear Newton wasn't himself thanks to the shoulder and the Lisfranc injury in his foot, which the team benched him after two starts. In November, the team put Newton on injured reserve. In December, Newton underwent surgery to repair his foot. Also in December, the Panthers were reportedly toying with the idea of trading the passer, but only for a, quote, large deal. And in February, owner Dave Tepper said he was concerned about Newton's health. A few weeks later, at the Combine, Panthers' new head coach Matt Rhule said they were impressed by Newton's rehab and they were ready to commit him as their starting quarterback. Things took a turn in March when, out of the blue, the Panthers gave Newton permission to seek a trade, which Newton said he didn't even want. And that's the timeline of how you go from an MVP in 2015, leading the team to a 15-1 record in a Super Bowl appearance, to being out of a job that quick, where there was just miscommunication all the way down the line. So here's the thing. Both Ron Rivera and Cam Newton have no part of the Dave Tepper resurgence of the Carolina Panthers, the new improved, as he would probably put it, Carolina Panthers. The way he wants to run this organization, the way he wants to build this organization, it has to be new coach and now new quarterback. But I think the analytics played into this deal, right? Because Newton, again, you know, money, it was an opportunity to save money and also an opportunity to get another quarterback. But the reality of it is, we say this all the time when you have this, you know, a starter, when you have a legit starter. They didn't even wait to see if Cam Newton would be healthy enough to be their quarterback. They didn't even wait to see if he recovered from all of this before they went in another direction. The analytics played such a big role in this release that it's almost mind-boggling to think that here's Cam Newton, one of the premier quarterbacks of the league when he's healthy. Because when he's healthy, he's very good. Right? He's an MVP. He leads, you know, franchise all-time leader in wins, all of those things. Can he, you know, even when healthy, is a threat to run the ball and score one with his feet, throw the ball. But again, you look at the cost and you look at where he was coming from and you say to yourself, you know what? Maybe it's time to part ways. They couldn't get a trade. They got a fifth round pick for Kyle Allen, and this guy's so beat up they couldn't get anything for him.
Well, maybe he wasn't. Because obviously, I don't know the details of any of the trades that they tried to make, but maybe it didn't make sense on paper.
Oh, sure, because there's a cost angle to it.
Yeah, contract is huge,
but if you're a team, right? And this is the other thing: if they could get a look at Cam Newton, if you're a team that has no quarterback, right? None. If you have no quarterback, and you can see that Cam Newton is healthy, or at least looks healthy and looks pretty decent. Even his big contract, you would still say, yeah, but we would budget this with anybody else. Like, you can budget in that cost for a quarterback if you have no quarterback. Like, if you are just literally like, if you're the Patriots, let's say, and you are saving, you're cutting and you're saving room, if you could get a guy at that cost, even for 1 year, you'd probably go, all right, we may have to make some things. We have to move some chairs and rearrange the furniture a little bit, but For a true starting quarterback in this league, that's about what it would cost. But you can get Jameis Winston cheaper. You can get Andy Dalton cheaper. If that's where you want to go, you absolutely get Brian Hoyer cheaper.
Yeah.
Right? You absolutely get Jared Stidham cheaper. So yes, it would be a big decision. But you know, the Panthers, I think Dave Tepper is excited about just saying, I want a fresh start with the two most important departments on my football team, the guy who's playing quarterback and the guy who's the head coach. So Ron Rivera and Cam Newton are out, and now I want a fresh start with both of those very important departments in my football team.
So then the big only question remains with the Panthers now: when does PJ Walker start?
That's right. When does PJ Walker get kicked in? So Teddy Bridgewater gets the start until PJ Walker's ready to go NFL time?
Or does he does he get thrown into it because inevitably Bridgewater ends up getting injured?
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Hopefully this guy was not that, but
this guy was the face of the franchise, man. Face of the franchise. They didn't even work out a deal or work out a new deal, a contract. Face of the franchise. Got hurt, and that was it. Plus, this would have been the last year of his deal. On his deal. So anybody who gets him would just have to pay him for 1 year because, you know, he's done. His contract's done.
Well, do they have to? They don't have to. Yeah. I mean, they can offer him anything.
Yeah. So
they can offer him a cup of coffee and saying, hey, this is a show me cup.
So, yeah. So, well, that's a great point. Think about this. So he's going into the last year of his deal, and the Panthers didn't even want a show me Cam Newton on their roster, a guy that's going to have wants to prove that he can stay in there and play at the level that you expect Cam Newton to play at. They don't even want to see that possibility. They definitely want to move on. So Teddy Bridgewater, have fun with Matt Rhule.
Now he's got to show up on a team, right?
Who, Cam Newton?
Cam Newton.
I got to think so. I got to think somebody's going to take Cam Newton. I don't know. Again, I agree with you. I don't know how the money works. I don't know who's willing.
Well,
to...
Well, I mean, now it's not about his contract. His contract is done. You know, and
so you can't get him in a trade. So if you're a free agent, get him whatever he wants.
Yeah, you can.
So, yeah,
I mean,
so now you can sign Patriots. Him to a $2 million contract for all you care.
Yeah, I mean, what's the league minimum? $2 million, right?
Yeah, something like that. Whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, you can go start from there and then maybe go up a little bit. But he's not getting a $20 million deal.
Oh no, that's it. That was his chance.
And I don't think there's a bidding war.
Well, that's the weird. That is why, again, I know we say this a lot, but this is one of the reasons why these NFL guys look at NBA contracts and go, God, really? God, you're getting all of that money. You're getting you just signed a $75 million deal. You're a backup guard and you're going to get every nickel of that. Where Cam Newton and his team knew exactly what the last year of that contract was going to be coming off an injured year. They knew he wasn't going to get a nickel of that money.
Yep.
Right, he's going to get $20 million, and I'm going to get a nickel of that money. Right, whereas now he's like, all right, I'll go play for two. I'll go somewhere else and play for three or whatever somebody wants to give me.
But it's something you and I have said all along, that the NFL, it's always going to be a business first.
Of course.
When teams are done with you, they are done with you.
Really, they are. They are done with you. And here's the thing. The moment you sign a big contract, the general manager is already thinking about life without you. What would it look like? It's not that they want to cross that. They're guaranteed to cross that bridge, but they're looking at the contract going, okay, we are going to start really looking at this guy 2 years from now, 3 years from now to see what that year is going to look like on paper. Because when you have, especially if an escalating contract where they go, look, you better be leading us to Super Bowls. You better be leading us to deep runs in the playoffs because 3 years from now, 4 years from now, this is when this contract's really going to hit us. And we got to determine whether or not there's value to it. And I'm sure that's Marty Herney felt the same way about Newton's deal going in. Like, look, will we get Newton in his final year? Yes. Is he the face of the franchise? Yes. Will we get a show me year from this quarterback who has led us to the Super Bowl? Yes. Is it financially worth it? Absolutely not.
And that is surprising. Because Marty Herney was the one who brought him in.
Yeah, they was going to draft him.
Yeah.
Number one overall.
Went after him, got him the deal. Then Marty Herney, obviously, he gets fired.
Yeah, right.
But then he's brought back.
So, yeah, then he's brought back.
I wonder how long that will last until Dave Tepper's like, you know what? I want my guy.
Yeah, right. Dave Tepper's on a roll now. So the Cam Newton era comes to an end. All right, coming up, a story that was going one way and everybody was salivating, but then went another. That's next, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Colbert, here's Tony D.
All right, when your battery goes dead, everything could come to a stop. Don't take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, so this next story had a ton of people salivating, had a ton of people ready to pounce, and rightfully so, okay? So Trevor Lawrence, the Clemson quarterback, and his girlfriend had set up a GoFundMe page to raise money for due to the coronavirus pandemic. They wanted to donate the money to Meals on Wheels, and they had were raising, it was close to $3,000. Then the story broke that the NCAA had forced the page to be shut down, right? Because Trevor Lawrence cannot use his name, image, and likeness for any type of fundraiser.
Yeah. Real quick, don't sell her short. She is a soccer player.
That's right. She's a soccer player,
too.
That's right.
Her image.
Marissa Maury, who plays for Anderson University. Yeah.
So she was using her image, albeit probably not as profitable as Trevor Lawrence, but
right.
Still.
Right. So they were doing a good job, right? Raising money, using a little bit of their celebrity to bring money, right? So the story breaks. The NCAA is forcing this to shut down. Oh, my God, were people ready to pounce on this? People couldn't wait to get a hold of this story. Then it started to change. Then the story started to switch, and it took another turn. What really happened was the NCAA told Clemson, it's up to you. It's your discretion of whether or not you want it, what you want to do. And Clemson's compliance office was the one that shut it down just in case. Now, you can make the argument that, you know, they felt the pressure from the NCAA to shut this down, but it wasn't the NCAA who shut this site down. And I think now Clemson has changed its mind, and I think it's back up again. I think you can donate to the Lawrence Maury Fund or the Maury Lawrence Fund, or however you want to put that together.
Well,
so
I
they donate for Meals on Wheels
I'm
and No
say,
Kid Hungry.
I'm going to say he's a stand-up guy. He probably put her name first.
Right, we probably put her name first.
You know, but it's his face.
On the deal. So this is from the NCAA. The NCAA did not ask Trevor Lawrence to take down his fundraiser for the COVID-19 patients and their families. We continue to work with member schools so they'll have flexibility to ensure that student athletes and communities impacted by this illness are supported, and we applaud Trevor for his effort. Oh, this is the only thing you could do. There is no spin coming from any organization, Clemson, NCAA, or otherwise, that would have made any sense at all in this story. So I'm glad everybody calmed down for a second and realized these kids were doing something really good for their community, using the celebrity for the right reason and raising money, and everybody pulled back their,
We need to storm NCAA headquarters with pitchforks and torches.
This is why I'm very glad that in a couple of years, all of this nonsense goes away. And these guys can make money doing whatever they want, whenever they want, with their image and likeness. Want to raise money for a charity? Want to raise money for yourself? It won't matter. Do it. It will just, it saves this kind of embarrassment. Because, again, let's say the NCAA did shut this down. Let's hypothetically. If they shut this down, how do you spin it? How do you spin it? In this current climate, how do you say, oh, well, you know, we have these little arcane rules about some sort of fairness of, we don't even know why it's in this book, but it's just in this book, and we have to stop. And in Clemson, I was really surprised in this story that before you make news with this, right? So Clemson's compliance department, gets a little nervous, so they ask for the shutdown. Don't you think in this situation, given what this GoFundMe page was for, given the current climate that we're in with this virus, that the Clemson compliance office would have said, before we act, let's absolutely make sure that the NCAA knows about this and what we're doing before we ask Trevor to shut this down? So let's call them up, let's talk to them, and then we don't have to do anything, and therefore nobody gets wind of anybody talking about anything about this GoFundMe page. Or was it just easier to ask Trevor Lawrence to shut it down, get in the news that you're shutting it down, blame the NCAA for shutting it down, and then everybody come back and go, no, I'm sorry, we made a huge mistake. That seems a lot more work than just making a quick phone call going, hey, just letting you know, He started this to raise funds for a community. Him and his girlfriend are trying to raise funds for a community affected by this virus. What should we do here? What do you advise us to do here? And if the NCAA says nothing, great, we're done. Click. Let's keep rolling along.
Yep.
Everybody donate your money.
Who's the snitch?
I know, right? Who is?
I can't believe the NCAA is like, well, let's just check on what Trevor Lawrence is up to today. Oh,
right.
Lucky.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, that's not happening. Somebody had to go and notify and say, hey, have you seen what Trevor Lawrence is doing lately?
Bet you it was Will Muschamp. Or see, anybody else in the ACC.
Let's see if we can get this guy suspended for the year.
Now, if he's raising money using his image and likeness, seems to me he should sit out an entire year for that. Or at least suspend him for the last game of the regular season.
Or the first four. That way they have no chance.
Exactly.
Or the middle four. I don't care.
Hilarious. This is so, I mean, God.
It's surreal that in 2020, we're still talking about NCAA players. I mean,
God.
How many stories versus, okay, how many positive stories where we see these athletes trying to do good? Or
yeah.
Trying to do something right, like transfer to a school so they can be closer to a loved one because that loved one is on their deathbed, versus, hey, this guy is just trying to make all the money so he can go and buy a new car.
That, you know, that's exactly right. That there always seems to be, whenever we do NCAA stories where they're hard on an athlete, it feels like the story the athlete is telling is just this one of virtue and goodness. And
are we not hearing the other side of it?
Maybe yeah, that's tugging it? The heartstrings. And does the NCAA know something where they're like, you guys, we're not going to tell you the real reason he wants to transfer. And because if we did, we'd ruin this young man's life, and we don't want him in the scrutiny, so we'll take the bullets. But you know what? Not what you think.
Do we never hear the GoFundMe page of, you know, athlete out of Iona? I'm going to pick on Iona because I have a feeling that we're going to start hearing about them a lot
more
often.
That.
But, you know, athlete out of Iona is trying to raise $400 for a new tattoo.
Right, right.
You know, or, you know, hey, come, you know, give me money on my Venmo. Send Venmo me some money.
That was the whole thing, right? Like, remember when, speaking of tattoos, remember when Jim Tressel lost his job at Ohio State when this guy's got tattoos?
That's why I'm bringing that up.
Like, I keep going.
To this day, I don't understand how you lose your job over kids getting tattoos.
I know. And it was like, think about that story. Going back to that story. So his players exchanged merchandise for free tattoos. And Jim Tressel was so scared of the ramifications of that, he covered it up. Which led to his departure from Ohio State, rather than saying, hey, I got a stupid story. Like, he wanted them to play in the Sugar Bowl so badly that he's like, I can cover this up, rather than going, guys, there's been, like, we don't have a booster giving these kids $100,000. Like, they didn't cheat on tests. They didn't have somebody take their tests for them. They're not on drugs. Like, nothing huge and serious. They're not making a mockery of the college experience. Got some tattoos for a jersey.
Yeah, we're not using strippers to recruit players.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a certain other coach who still has a job.
Exactly. So if you could do us a favor, seriously, like, we didn't give a mother a house and a car so he'll run the football for us here in Columbus. So here's the deal. Yeah. Why don't you let them play in the Sugar Bowl, and then those who are coming back next year, I don't know, we suspend them for the first game when we're going to wallop Youngstown State 45-0.
Right.
Like, why don't we do that? It's literally tattoos for a couple of jerseys or whatever they were giving the guy. And instead, Jim Tressel's like, I don't have a job anymore.
I can't get hired.
I lost one of the premier jobs in college in college football because my athletes got tattoos for shirts, and I decided maybe I shouldn't tell anybody about this.
Okay, well, Jim Tressel's never tried to actively look for another job, right?
I don't know where Jim Tressel is today. I think he went into the NFL for a bit. I think it was like a consultant for the Colts or something.
Because that seems a little surprising to me.
I'm going to look him up during the break because I think he was a consultant for some NFL team. But I have no. Yeah, exactly. Oh, absolutely. He could have parlayed that. He could have parlayed himself into another gig.
Yeah, I mean, if Rick Pitino.
Rick Pitino.
He's getting another job. Art Briles has gotten hired and fired within weeks.
Exactly.
Since his, you know, and that was the biggest cover up ever.
Oh, my God. I mean, listen, Rick Pitino could dress Kyrie Irving up as Uncle Drew and play him and still get a job in college basketball when it's all said and done.
And just say, like, what? He handed me his birth certificate.
Exactly. Exactly. Says here he's got 3 years of eligibility left because he last played in 1952. Seriously. And Rick Pitino would land on his feet perfectly. Yeah, Jim Tressel. I'm going to look him up because I think he went to the NFL and was not like an assistant coach or anything, but like a offensive analyst or one of those positions that's up in the box.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, this portion of SB Nation Radio brought to you in part by Hims, the best choice in ED medication and men's wellness. Visit forhims.com/easy. That's forhims.com/easy. All right, I did look up Jim Tressel. So from 2011 until 2012, he was a consultant with the Colts. And then he served as the vice president of strategic engagement for the University of Akron until 2014. And then May of 2014, he became the president of Youngstown State, where he was once a football coach.
That's
where he coached Maurice Claret. He was there for 14 seasons before the Ohio State job.
That's pretty impressive.
It is impressive. He parlayed getting fired from Ohio State into a little consultant job with the Colts and then the president of Youngstown State University. Sounds like a different kind of career arc, don't you think? Becoming the president of the university?
Maybe.
Like, if you're a football coach, can you be a president of the university? Do you even know what that does? What do you have to do to become a president of the university?
Or are we saying that being president of a university is as equivalent as being the head football coach of Ohio State University? The Ohio State University.
That might be it. They're like, well, what do you do around here? Well, we make sure the university runs smooth. Oh, I got this. I ran a top Division I program, won a national championship. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, sure. Plus, I know the grounds here. I was the head coach here for 14 years. All right, go ahead. Become the president.
Yeah.
Nice career arc. That's fantastic. All right, so
you can't get in trouble for his students getting trading merchandise for tattoos.
Right, exactly.
Athlete or regular.
I loved it. That's fancy. That's great. That's a good story. That's a good little angle. He won the. Remember when the Nationals beat Miami in the Fiesta Bowl?
Yep.
To win the national title?
I remember that game.
Remember that?
I remember exactly where I was, too, because I was up in a cabin in the woods.
Were you really?
Well, I say this the woods,
my,
but
my apartment in Denver.
It was in Big Bear.
And I remember, Big Bear?
Yeah, we rented a house. It was with my family, and we rented a house, and they had a basement area that had a pool table, but a smaller size pool table. And then they had, like, a foosball table. And so it was, like, this total game room and a big TV. It was like, this is fantastic. I could watch every bowl game from this room.
Oh, nice.
You'll never have to see me again.
Yeah, I remember that. That was their first title in, like, forever. And remember, John Cooper was the coach at Ohio State. And he couldn't beat Michigan or something. He had trouble beating Michigan. And then Tressel came in. And he really understood where it was going. And so I did more research yesterday on spring football. So I felt like I was, because I did, I'm on this kick with the XFL and the old XFL. And yesterday there was a 30 for 30 on the USFL. And I found out that it was one of the first 30 for 30s that was produced. And remember, the reason it's called 30 for 30, because it was 30 films for 30 years. And it was done in 2009 as part of the celebration. It was one of Bill Simmons' creations. And this film was called Small Potatoes, and it was about the USFL in the 80s, which I remember as a kid. And the guy who directed and produced this film happened to be the lead videographer of the league. He was like the Steve Sable of the USFL, Okay, so he had all the footage. He put together the highlights packages. He did all of that. And it was a great documentary because I remember as a kid the USFL. But again, I'm a kid. I don't know the politics of it. I don't know the business of it. I don't know if it's successful. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I just know ABC Sports has got it on my TV in the spring, and I'm watching it because it's football. I don't really have a favorite team, but it's kind of fun spring football. So. Getting behind, and I've read Jeff Perlman's book, Football for a Buck, about the USFL. So it was neat to kind of go back and figure out whether or not that entity would have worked had they not decided to go in the fall a couple of years later. Now, you know about the, if you remember the USFL, whether you were young or you were old enough to really remember it, you remember that this was a league that actually went out and got, they could get players. Like they could compete financially to get players. This is a league that got Herschel Walker, of course. That was the big coup. But they also had Steve Young at a BYU. They got Jim Kelly. They had Doug Flutie. They had Mike Rozier. I mean, they had a number of players that came into the league. They could offer some money. They had Reggie White that played in the USFL. So they were competing on a level. Now, financially, the NFL hasn't become the behemoth yet, where in terms of it's offering huge $30 million a year for the quarterback. I mean, Young got a huge deal in the USFL, but it was like an annuity. But it was becoming successful, right? Burt Reynolds was involved in the Tampa Bay outfit. Steve Spurrier was the head coach there. They had good teams. They had bad football, but they had good teams. And the fans seemed to enjoy it. They had good ratings. While the ratings took a little bit of a dip, they were still pretty solid for what they were building. But of course, when you talk about the USFL and you talk about the battle of why it, you know, where it failed and where it disappeared, there were two personalities that were involved in the USFL that were really brought to light by this documentary. One was the owner of the Tampa Bay Bandits named Jim Bassett. Who was the owner there. He was kind of the quasi-leader of the ownership group in terms of where they were going and what they wanted, the vision for the league and where they were heading. Like a lot of owners took their cue from Jim Bassett. And then a real young real estate mogul named Donald Trump bought the New Jersey Generals. And he was the one that really started to start forcing the league to push it towards being in the fall. Now, there was controversy in the documentary about what was really the motivation behind it. Did Trump see an opportunity to go head-to-head in the early 80s with the NFL? Or did he see an opportunity to take his franchise and either get bought out by the NFL or absorbed into the NFL in some capacity? Maybe he'd have to move it out of the New York, New Jersey area since there was already two teams there, but at least he would own a franchise that could be relocated and be part of the NFL. No, you know, you never really got a feel. The documentary doesn't really give any evidence for either one. It does present both cases. But in the end, they sued the NFL for a monopoly, for having a monopoly. They won. But they couldn't get any damages from the league. So what happened was they got a dollar. That's why Jeff Perlman's book is Football for a Buck. They were awarded a dollar is almost like a, I know there's a legal term for it, but it would just be like, look, you win, but you don't have anything, but here's a buck. But, and then it was a triplicate. So they ended up with $3 and change. That's what they won. Out of the case against the NFL. So the NFL survives and the USFL dies. But the one thing that comes about of this, and so again, I'm kind of fascinated with this because I'm interested in whether or not a spring football league would work, right? When we're all back to sports again, whether this current XFL would work and what elements can it take from both the USFL in the early 80s and its own product 20 years ago when the XFL was a big, huge entertainment behemoth, but no football, really no good football. the USFL was pretty good football, and there was a lot of entertainment value to it, and it was running in the spring, and it had good relationship with its television partner. They were trying to grow something. So they didn't, and they did in the 80s what the XFL couldn't afford to do in the 2000s, which was the USFL knew, look, just keep playing, right? Just keep playing. There are going to be some franchises that are going to struggle with paychecks, and there's going to be some of us that are going to be more successful. We'll weed out some of the markets where it's not really quite working, and then we'll really bring up the markets that are working. But in the end, we, you know, let's keep playing. Let's get this as part of the sports culture in the communities and cities that we're in. It'll take a few years, but we'll just keep growing it, keep growing it. Let's not expand too much with the which the USFL did. By year two, they went, they added six teams, I think, to the roster. They went from 12 teams to 18. Way too big of an expansion. But they understood Bassett's plan was to keep growing it. So I look at Oliver Luck in this current XFL group, which sent two players to, got signed just the other day. PJ Walker and Jordan Tamu got signed by the NFL. I look at the XFL and go, okay, look, if you're going to make it, you where the AAF failed, where the XFL in 2000 failed, and where eventually the USFL failed, each one of them has a different story, right? The AAF was underfunded. The XFL had bad ratings, and they really just wanted good ratings, and they wanted to be a television show rather than a football product. And the USFL just bit off a little bit more than it could chew in the 80s by going actually head-to-head with the NFL to play in the fall when they were really, they were getting the players. The great part of the documentary was Jim Kelly, who went to four Super Bowls and is in the Hall of Fame, and Steve Young, who won a Super Bowl and was on what, two or three as a backup. Both of them talked about the greatest game they ever participated in was a USFL shootout in Los Angeles between the Houston Gamblers and the LA Express, in which, I mean, like Jim Kelly threw for like 560 yards and five touchdowns. It was a shootout. Both had these aerial attacks, and both of them say when they meet each other, that's the first thing they talk about is, when you're a quarterback, what do you want to, how do you want to play? You want to throw the ball all the time, and you want to throw the ball, rack up yards, and get into these games where you do something, I'll top that. You do then you'll top me, and then I'll top you. And that's what this game was. It's called the greatest game nobody saw, because it was like 800 people in the stands. But it was, these guys still talk about it in a way that makes you realize the joy of playing that position, playing sports, never left them. That the USFL and the joy they had playing never left them. It's great. It was great. Now, I do have to give this point. I'm not stupid. When I watch these things, nostalgia is always the good memories. They're never the bad. Right? I will tell you, and I know many of you have heard me say this, I spent 2 years of my life working in minor league basketball. They were two of the most stressful times of my life financially sometimes. You really would run to the bank to cash that check. You really didn't know if you were going to get paid. But because I got through it and I was young and my wife was doing, you know, she had a good job and we were cool and I had a great time. It was two of the great years of my life, no doubt. So when I think back on those 2 years, I don't remember those stresses. I don't remember those arguments in the hallways. I don't remember everybody freaking out, you know, when the season was over and there was rumors that we were shutting down. No, I don't remember. I remember laughing and having a good time and watching basketball and going on the road and all of those things that I got to do with those teams. I think this documentary is that. I think this documentary is a bunch of guys who remember nothing but the good times of being in the USFL, nothing but the great times of being in the league. But I'm sure there were a lot of stressful moments. I'm sure there was a lot of moments where they were like, what are we doing? I shouldn't have done this. I should have been in the NFL. Why am I not in the NFL? What are we doing here? What do you mean we don't have this in the locker room or that in the locker room? I'm sure there was a lot of that. But they all reminisced about how awesome it was, how great it was. And you know what? For Kelly and Young, I'll believe them, because that was a great game. The highlights of that game were pretty amazing. So I'm still fascinated in this. When we get back to sports next spring, if the XFL learned its lesson from three entities that tried spring football to try to come up with a formula that would work, so it will stick around a little bit longer, especially a little bit longer than the others did. All right. It is, again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. It's SB Nation AM.
listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. If I wasn't quarantined, I probably wouldn't be doing all of this spring football research, but I feel like I have the resources at my fingertips now.
I know, you do.
Accessing the 30 for 30 library.
So your life is so much different than mine right now.
I'm looking for things to do.
I go home. I'm trying to avoid things to do.
I know, that's right. Yeah.
I come home and it's all of a sudden, hey, Dad, I need help with this. Dad,
I know.
I'm sitting there, I go, come on, guys.
You are in for. I'm not kidding when I tell you this. You're gonna miss the days when your kids were little, but you are in for a when they are on their own and want nothing to do with you. There's a feeling of like a little Harry Chapin, Cats in the Cradle, but there's also a feeling of thank God I got through it. Thank God you are self-sustained.
Right now, I have the right to complain.
Of course,
I'm not ever going to give Philip Rivers grief about doing his first Colts press conference from his bathroom.
Right.
Because I know I'm that father. I know exactly what he's talking about. I'll go into my bathroom. I'll lock my bedroom door to get to my bathroom and lock that door. So that way I have two doors that I know I'm keeping you out away from.
It's nuts. That is so cool.
But no, yeah. I mean, it's great. I mean, you know, they're trying to figure out this whole online school thing. It's kind of crazy. My son, who's in third grade, he has a Zoom meeting today.
Oh, that's exactly. My son was talking about that today, yesterday too. I was like, wow.
The teacher isn't teaching anything. She just said it'd be great to get the kids all on Zooms. That way, they can all just talk to each other and say hi to each other and see that everyone is okay. And I was like, you know, that's a brilliant idea. So he's got a Zoom meeting for a half hour today.
There is a this is a question. If this is a question for a person on a higher level than me. So this is below my pay grade.
I'll answer it for you.
So, please. Do you think when this is all said and done, education takes a real hard look at technology and goes, you know, maybe we don't need every single kid in the district to be in a building? Like
all the time.
You know what I mean? Like, if you want to send them to the building because you don't have daycare and you struggle with feeding your kid and we feed your kid, great. But we don't need everybody here. If you can afford to stay home and sit by a computer and watch the lesson, do it. Take some resources off our schools.